What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Well, guys, this is our first episode in the new studio with a guest. So I've been really looking forward to getting him on for a while. He's a good friend of mine, one of my coaches, someone I really have looked up to for a long time. Great and powerful, Trevor Ratzke.
Well, I'm going to blush.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for coming on. It's always a pleasure watching you throw Zach around on the mat.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, someone who's probably delivered more beatings to me than anybody else in jiu-jitsu is sitting right across the table from me.
So. Well, I hope it's been somewhat beneficial.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I've learned more from you than, I mean, you and Kyle than anybody in my jiu-jitsu journey. Obviously, you guys are my coaches, but I look up to you guys so much. And you guys have helped me out so much, and I look forward to, you know, going to your class every Monday, Wednesday, Friday for the last several years now.
Yeah. So, now I gotta be nice to him.
Yeah, now you gotta now you do here, but then he'll beat me up on Friday morning. but anyway, Trevor, for everyone out there that doesn't know you, if you could just kind of tell us a brief little summary of you, and then we'll kind of get into things.
Yeah, so I am a coach all around, always have been. I am a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu instructor at Watson Martial Arts. I've been with him since 2012-ish, something like that. Probably always will be. I also am a nutrition and fitness coach online at Tailored Coaching Method, based out of Seattle. Been with them for about 4 years. I'm almost 35. I'll be 35 next month. And I live out in the suburbs outside of St. Louis with my wife, Lexi, our son, Rowan, and our little Boston Terrier, Peaches. And yeah, I mean, at this point in my life, I'm really, really focused on just helping men and women become the best version of themselves in their relationships and their hobbies and their careers. And like, I use jiu-jitsu instruction and also like body transformation, so building muscle, losing body fat as like the vessel to get them there.
Nice. So awesome. I guess this is something how did you get into jiu-jitsu originally?
Yeah, so I was one of those little kids that like, it was everything that I watched, whether it was cartoons or movies, as even just like Power Rangers, everything had to be fighting. Yeah. Dragon Ball Z, Jackie Chan, like
Spider-Man, X-Men,
everything, you know,
all
fighting.
The things, that was me. Yeah.
And you know, I grew up in a small town in a farm in Northeast Missouri in Bowling Green, and we didn't have any, there was no wrestling, there was no martial arts, there was no nothing. So it was just me watching whatever I was into as a little kid, beating up my little brother, getting boxing gloves, stuff like that. And then as I got older, you know, C came around, I was watching that, and George St. Pierre was like my idol. And yeah, I mean, I played football, so we would all like wrestle each other and beat each other up. You get in street fights and stuff like that. But yeah, so I had a friend, Steven, who actually reached out recently. He's wanted to get back into jiu-jitsu. But I had a friend who we would watch UFC and any jiu-jitsu material that we could get our hands on and just like practice, like his living room, in my living room.
Just like on the carpet.
Yeah, just like try to figure it out. We didn't have access to anything back then. And then one day he reached out. I don't even think I could drive yet. I think he was 16, just got his driver's license. And he's like, hey, I found a jiu-jitsu school. It's in Troy, Missouri, which was 30 minutes away. Let's go. I think we went to an actual class that was followed by an open mat. And I can't even remember the guy's name off the top of my head. This is kind of rude, but I'll think of it. But I think it was a black belt way back then. So I would have been.
Yeah. So what year was
it? Been 2015. No, 2005.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So it was my first jiu-jitsu class. Now,
black belts were like unicorns back then.
For sure. Yeah. And he might not have been. I had a lot of concussions.
Yeah,
who knows? Who knows what he was? He could have been a blue belt. I don't know. But so I went in there, football player, had been weightlifting since middle school, was decently strong, thought I could fight, thought I was tough. And I wasn't at all. Went in there. He taught us one choke. I think it was just like a basic head and arm choke from mount or side control or somewhere. And then we all just jumped into open mat. And it was just me and my buddy and then the instructor and then like a kid who was younger than me. And when you're in high school, anybody younger than you should be able to beat up. That's the rules.
Yeah,
that's the unwritten rule of life. Yeah. That was not the case. So I like, all right, I'm going to show this guy what I got. The instructor get on top, and he's laying there on his back with his eyes closed, breathing through his nose, and I'm huffing and puffing. I'm getting nowhere, of course. And he just submits me a bunch. And I was like, okay, interesting. That felt like magic. That was weird. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to go beat this scrawny kid over here. And then he beat the shit out of me. And so I think what I always tell like new students when they have that experience is like, it's one of two things. Either you're going to go, all right, I'm never doing that again. Like, I'm never going to let that happen to me again. Or you go, okay, I want to be able to do that to somebody someday. Like that, I want to do that. And that was me. Like, I didn't have any money at the time, though. So, like, going back and, like, signing up for a membership, I didn't even drive. You know what I mean? 30 minutes away when you're in high school is, like,
forever.
It's a lot, yeah. Especially when you live out in the country and whatever. But, so it was just in the back of my mind just forever, right? And so we even started, like, a little bike club in high school. We made t-shirts. Like, we had boxing gloves. We had shin guards. Like, we would all just, like, hold little, like, matches. Out in the yard, usually in the
yard. In the yard?
Yeah, yeah. We call it Frankfurt Fight Club. Shout out, FFC. So anyways, it was always in the back of my mind, but I ended up going a different path. Just didn't have wrestling, right? So ended up playing football and then hated it in college. Played at a small school.
So you played all 4 years in high school? Or
middle school, high school. Yep. Okay. And then I played at Central Methodist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know you went and played college football.
Yeah. I wasn't good enough to be there, I don't think.
What position did you play?
I was supposed to be in there as a running back, but they switched up the coaching staff and switched to more of just like a spread offense. And so I was catching little slants and stuff like that. Yeah, stuff which I sucked at catching the ball. So anyway, I was kind of miserable playing football, and I really wanted to train. MMA was more my thing back then, like as far as what I was interested in. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be an MMA fighter, and I wanted to switch to my degree to get into like strength conditioning, exercise science, and I wanted to fight in MMA, and I wanted to be like an MMA strength and conditioning coach. That was the path that I went down, even though kind of a made up thing back then.
And what were you doing?
What I wanted to do
before
athletic training, which is kind of like physical therapy and first aid for like the athletes, like the people who were on the field, like
taping up ankles.
You snap your shoulder, throwing the baseball, boom, they're out there helping you, you know, or they're in the rehab room doing all that stuff, traveling with the team. So turns out I was really squeamish.
Really?
Shouldn't have been out there. Shouldn't have been doing that. Yeah, shouldn't have been sitting around waiting for injuries.
I would not have guessed that.
Yeah.
All the times you cranked my limbs into every direction.
That's different.
Yeah.
That's different. So
seeing the aftermath.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It's the aftermath. Yeah, usually tap so you don't snap it.
I've told this story before, but I really had this like one moment where I was really miserable. Everything felt wrong about my major, people I was spending time with. I wasn't meeting new people. It was all just people from high school in college. Everything just felt wrong. And I remember one night being on the football field, just looking up into the stands, and like none of my family was there to watch me play. And I didn't want to be there playing. I was like, doing like, yeah, they're proud of me that I'm doing this. But like, nobody really, like, I have to live my life every single day.
And I don't like
it. Yeah. And yeah. So I switched to a school. I didn't know anybody. I switched majors. I started training MMA and like Japanese jiu-jitsu. It was no-gi. Turns out, yeah. The instruction was not very good, but so what happened was I started learning exercise science and strength conditioning and all that stuff. And I meet Jose Vega, who was a Bellator fighter at the time, pro fighter. And we did like an exchange of services where I would do his like personal training 2 days a week in the basement gym of our dorm.
Oh,
but he would commute over and do that with me. And then he taught me like MMA at the gym that I was training at. He'd come in and like almost like as a special guest and like just pick me one-on-one, have me hold the mitts, teach me the wrestling, the jiu-jitsu and everything. So
that was like your first real like formal training other than
for sure
your buddies.
Yep. And I would just do it when I could afford it. Do a semester here, a semester there. Ended up doing one MMA fight like my senior year. I won, retired undefeated. Big deal, everybody. Yeah, 90 seconds of cage time.
Would you submit him?
No. My coach didn't want me to. He knew I like at. It's funny looking back, thinking like, "Oh, I was a good grappler." I wasn't. I wasn't even a white belt. Right? I was nothing. Yeah. it was made up. So it's funny looking back, thinking that I was good on the ground. But the plan was like, you can take this guy there. Like, let's stand with him. So it's just horrible. Like, it was like a roadhouse bar with a cage in it. Horrible.
Sounds like fun though.
It was fun. Yeah, it was fun. But then, like, it's one of those things where the guy you're supposed to fight and you've been training for just cancels last minute. And then they get some guy in basketball shorts like, hey, he's not smoking a cigarette. Like, I'll fight.
I'll fight.
It was like that. It was like that one day notice. So this guy has not been preparing. I'm like,
yeah, you've been
tracking my
in
macros.
For, yeah.
I'm doing the weight cut. I'm doing the water loading. I'm doing all the stuff. And then, so I jump in there with this guy and no, I didn't. I just threw strikes and I was obviously freaked out.
Sure.
They locked that cage. Yeah, it's horrible. I'm glad I did it, but I was really scared and really, really scared. And so all of my training just went out the window. It's like blacked out. And I just started throwing flying knees. The video does exist. It's on my mother's Facebook. She likes to share it every like 5 years. It's super. It looks like it was filmed on a potato. It's super blurry. But so I go out there, I panic. I just start throwing flying knees. That's why Kyle sometimes jokes and he calls me Skip Knee Ratsky.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I thought that was like for the expats you always do.
No. I connect with this guy and I wanted him off me because he was like trying to hit me. So I just threw him on the ground, like muscled him on the ground. He got back up and then I just start throwing knees with no setup from like further than me and you away, like me to the wall flying. I've never learned this in my life. I don't know.
Just started just
it was just
jumping
out. It was in me. And so I connected several of those and then one put him into the cage and he just collapsed over and I
followed
threw
up some
another,
strikes.
No, I oh. threw another knee. Right in the ribs from a good 8 feet away. Just
ran at him flying.
Yeah. And then that put him down and then I just started hitting him and then I won and that was it. And I never did it again. Moved to St. Louis and I kind of realized about you meet enough MMA fighters to know that like most of them are just fucking crazy and have no care for their own well-being, which is good. I admire that, but I do care a lot. I really didn't want to get hurt. I already had multiple concussions from car wrecks and who knows what
football.
Else. Yeah. And so I was like, even if I do good, I'm not that great of an athlete. I'm really not. So I knew even if I get into MMA, it's going to be a few years. I'm going to get okay. And then I'm going to quit and I'm going to be beat up. So I was like, I started jiu-jitsu. I was like, I can do this forever. Actually started at a Gracie Baja, the first one in St. Louis.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where was that at?
I was one of the founding members in O'Fallon. Okay. Yeah. So I was personal training, started jiu-jitsu, just gi, did like 6 months. And then I moved down to the city and I worked in a gym where Kyle Watson in the same building.
Because you were at the lab, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And then.
So I'd work downstairs and I'd go upstairs and train jiu-jitsu during the day.
Okay. So. And then you and Kyle just kind of didn't it like turn out to be, I've heard the story before where you guys kind of like traded services essentially.
Yep. Same thing as the MMA guy in college.
Yeah.
And what's funny is when I was moving down to the city, I was looking for a gym and I happened to find that job posting for that gym. And then I found Watson's place and I was like, man, it'd be really cool. Like he fought in the UFC.
Yeah.
And GSP was my idol.
I was going to say, you said GSP was your idol earlier. Yeah.
So I'm looking at that and I don't even think I've ever told Kyle this. He'll listen and he'll laugh, but I think I literally looked and I was like, man, it'd be really cool to go be his student and like train him for strength and conditioning. Right. Cause that was still kind of something I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And it worked out. I just was trained and then eventually like kind of, you know, came buddy buddy. And then he knew that I worked downstairs, sees me all the time. So yeah, he pitched that and then I would train him. And then I just got like a free membership at that point. That was like the thing.
The deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. You know,
and I just never, ever left.
Yeah. And then here you are three gyms later, you know?
Yeah. And eventually because of that relationship and how much time we spent one-on-one, became good friends. He's like my best friend / dad / older brother. He's like and mentor and boss. And like, he's all these things, my coach,
right?
All in one, which is awesome. And then somewhere around blue belt. Yeah. We had a lot of interest in like a 6 a.m. class and I was an early bird as is. So he asked if I wanted to do it. And I was at that point, like, really had bad social anxiety, like crippling social anxiety to the point where, like, I almost didn't go into this industry at all because on the one hand, yes, I wanted to help people. But on the other hand, to help people, you got to talk to people and interact with them. And, like, just wanted to avoid that. But, like, deep down, it's like, okay, want this, you're going to have to deal with this. And teaching jiu-jitsu was like that, like, yeah, I want that more than anything. So.
Got to figure this out.
Start it. Got to stand up in front of people and lead a class.
Terrifying.
Pussy.
Yeah.
You know? Go do it.
I remember, I shadowed you for like one or two classes before I taught my own. But that first class that I was going in to teach, because I taught Kyle's basics class upstairs for about 2.5 years before we had our second kid. And, I was just terrified. I was like, God, I'm, you know, and I'm a blue belt, you know, I was like, I feel like I'm not qualified. Like,
then imposter syndrome.
Sure. It's like, it's terrifying.
Why to teach?
Why? I don't know that much. You know, I get beat up all the time. Yeah. But I guess I know more than these brand new white belts, I guess, because I could beat them up.
So I definitely felt that. But now looking back, it's like no one remembers any of those classes. They were dog shit, probably. And you know what made it worse at the time for me? Josh McKinney often took them.
Wait, he took the
my classes. Oh, because yeah, because
where was he at that time? What level?
Probably purple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I mean,
probably like high purple and just killing everybody, including me for my whole life. So, yeah, him and Adam Arberger would be train jujitsu 6 a.m. and we'd go out to coffee like every Tuesday, Thursday. It was super fun. We all got super close and traveled and competed and stuff. But yeah, so having him there at the time, he wasn't a black belt yet, but he was still like, he was Josh McKinney.
Yeah.
He knew way more than me, but he was always really nice and like didn't shit on me or be like, no, you said that dumb or you did, you know, it's helpful. They both were.
Right. So, I mean, Josh is, I feel like he's just a great coach and he's a great, the way he teaches, I think is awesome.
Yeah.
I look up to Josh a ton.
Yeah, for sure. He's an animal. So, and I've just been kind of doing that ever since. I've at different periods over the year taught more, taught less. Now I'm at a stage I just teach the 3 days a week, do privates here and there, and that's it, really.
So were you one of Kyle's first black belts that he had?
No, I'm not sure where I fall into that. It would be, what, Mike Six Allen, seven, Josh, at least...
Steve McKinney.
At least four before me, I think, if not more.
Mike Allen, Josh, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
When did you get yours?
I was gonna say, I feel like you might be. I don't know. I could be wrong.
I should know this, but I really struggle. Like, if you're like, hey, what year was it when you did that? I'm like, I don't know. But
hitting the head a lot.
Yeah, for sure. So, I don't know. I just got my instructor bars. If that means anything.
Yeah. So several years now, probably.
Yeah. Right? So I can remember when I got married and when my son was born. At this point, that's all that matters.
Right. Yeah, me too.
So, but yeah, I guess I've been teaching that whole time. And yeah, it is funny now. Like I can go teach a seminar with 30, 40, 50 people and like not
be worried about
not feel nervous at all.
You just get better at shit. Just kind of like we were talking about before the show, you know, kind of you're starting to, I mean, you've done a lot of stuff on social media in the past, but now you've been over the last few weeks, I feel like you've been really dialing it in and being really consistent.
Yeah.
And just the more, you know, we were just saying the more, just like anything else, just like fitness, just like jiu-jitsu, just like whatever, you know, you can slowly get better at things over time. It just takes effort and consistency.
Yeah, right. And jiu-jitsu, it's funny. Jiu-jitsu is funny because like there's all these life principles that you hear or you read, people tell you, but like they don't get in you until you do stuff, and then like you experience it, like really know it, the principle of life, whatever it is, like that, and then you get it, and then you can apply it to other stuff. Like jiu-jitsu, like it's. Learning jiu-jitsu was a framework. Just like now I feel like I can go learn anything, but you got to be interested in whatever you're going to go learn. Right.
Right.
I always use people like the example of like, think of any like bowling or anything like that, where you got to be really interested. Like you can go learn it. You guys can both become, I don't know if you bowl, but you could, were really into it and you just dedicated like a couple of years to like, all right, you're going to study bowling books. You're going to get on YouTube. You're going to hire an instructor or a teacher, and you're gonna go bowl like multiple times a week instead of once every 2 years, like most people do.
That's what I do.
You could get really, really good at it, for sure. Are you gonna get good in comparison to good people?
Class?
No, probably not. Who cares, right?
You're gonna get way better around St. Louis,
right?
Take their money.
Yeah, it's always one of those things. It's like, okay, if I got in a time machine and I went back, like in jiu-jitsu, and I just had a street fight with myself, I walked up behind myself, pushed him, hey, let's fucking go. I could still. There's no point I can't go back and beat myself up. And like, that's like, for me, the ultimate measuring stick, just like anything else. It's like, yeah, you're not going to like, I've always been kind of mediocre at everything. Like a lot of things. I was never like a standout athlete or all that smart or anything, but you know, yeah, you can get, as long as you're better than you were previously. Like that's really what matters. Just progress. And that's what I love. Kyle's tagline, the art of improvement.
Yeah. It's such a great,
like it's,
I love that line.
Awesome. It's kind of all that. I'm much more focused on that now than I am like goal focused nowadays, like much more process focused. Like I just enjoy learning and getting better. And like, jiu-jitsu is so slow, like, yeah, to like get where you want to be.
Building the mountain out of
it's like
of
a
pain.
Decade. So now I can, yeah, pick something like social media and I go, okay, like, once I just start it and commit to doing it, like, okay, I'm going to do it X amount of times a week minimum. Here's my ceiling. Here's my floor on my frequency. And just do it, learn. And in 5 years, I'll probably be really, it'll get me somewhere. I'll be really good at it. But yeah, got to be willing, like that discomfort, have a willingness towards that discomfort for like a, maybe a really long time. And again, I might not ever be as good as people who are good at social media, but I'll be way better than yeah. Trevor was in, you know, 2024.
Sure.
That's 100%. And that's all that matters.
Awesome. Yeah. Sure.
So I do want to kind of dig into, you know, what you do for work. So you work for Tailored Coaching Method. How did that come about? Like, did you always do, now that's more nutrition or, mm-hmm. okay.
And yeah, then, both nutrition and fitness. We do both. I would say probably 80 to 90% of the people that I work with, we just work on the nutrition side of things, the mindset, the sleep, the movement, everything. And I'm not formally programming their workouts. And then there's another 10, 20% on average that are where I'm actually customizing their training. But yeah, so at this point, I work with a variety of people, but I really, really am passionate about like people in that like 30 to 50 year old age range who, you know, a lot of them have active hobbies or they're wanting to lose, say, you know, 20 to 50 pounds to, you know, to play with their kids, to be a better father, to be a better husband, to be a better leader at work, to be a better role model. Or if they have an active hobby like Muay Thai, Jiu-Jitsu, or cares, running, doesn't matter. They're getting their body fat to a healthy place, whether that be through maintaining muscle, losing body fat, building muscle, or some kind of combination. Getting them there, like, it really does enhance those other things. You know what I mean? Like, you guys know how it is if you're, like, life of domain-wise, if you're struggling with your health and your self-care and your fitness, like, those other, you're not going to show up as that same person in those other roles. And so that's what I really focus on now. Like, it's, yes, it's weight loss. Yes, it's all that kind of stuff. Yes, it's getting abs or whatever. But it's so much more than that. You know what I mean? So that's what I focus on now, completely remote. Most of my clients I've never met in person. We do essentially, yeah, we're based out of Seattle. We've got, you know, up to 10 coaches kind of all over. West Coast, East Coast, South America. So, yeah, work with people all over the world. And I love what I do. I've been with them for 4 years as of last week. And,
congratulations.
Yeah, I think you're just trying to become a better coach all the time.
So did you go from the lab to there?
No, gosh, the lab would have been 2012 to maybe like 2016, four-ish years. And then I went to another gym actually out here in Sunset Hills for about 4 years.
Okay.
And then, gosh, that was getting close to COVID. I was at a certain point around COVID, like kind of just going out on my own. I was actually even doing some personal training out of Watson's. That's all my equipment in there.
Oh,
for the most
really?
Part. Yeah. So yeah, I was doing some personal training out of there, doing a little bit of, at that point, a little bit of hybrid, like in-person training and then online nutrition, right? And so, but eventually, yeah, COVID hit and then I got the opportunity, applied for Tailored Coaching Method, got the job, and I've just been getting better every year. And I love it. I still feel like I have so much to learn. And I love remote coaching just because everything's so much more synergistic between mindset and nutrition and training and just all of the things. Whereas when I was just a personal trainer, people got great results, but it just wasn't the same as when you put it all together, right? When I can, you know, when I can see everything at once rather than, hey, we're doing a personal training session or a small group training session. And the last 5 minutes, it's like, hey, how was nutrition, right? Now that's the focal point. And then, yes, they're still lifting, they're still walking, they're still doing their cardio, they're still working on their sleep, their mindset, adherence, and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's fat loss especially is a very synergistic thing, right? There's never any just one thing that someone needs, right? So they can get the workouts spot on, right? But then there might be three or four other things that they just need to kind of get in place, not even perfectly, just good enough, bring it up to a certain threshold to where, all right, now all these things are working together. Right now you're sleeping good. You've got, you're working on building muscle, you're moving enough. Your food quality is better. You're not binging on the weekends. Like you're not giving up on yourself every time you make a mistake, right? So it's just this cohesive thing. It's a synergistic thing. That's why I always say I am a generalist, and it's rather than a specialist, right? There are plenty of coaches, great coaches, who really, really hone in on just like one thing. Like, all right, I'm the, you know, I'm the gut health guy. I'm the sleep guy. I'm the training guy. I'm the strength. Like, that's cool. But for me, it was the path of like, okay, let me understand each of these things enough to pull the main principles and concepts out that are like useful for like the population that I want to work with, which is not elite athletes, right? Like that stuff's cool. I used to want to do that, but now I work with regular ass people. Yeah, hobbyists.
Shows with active hobbies.
Hobbyists. Yeah, yeah. I love it. Doesn't matter what it is, but like.
Well, I mean, let's be real. You said you like the mindset aspect of it. Like, I mean, I'm the same way. I fell off of working out after baseball and my mindset went shit. Mm-hmm. Gotten back into it, mindset's so much better. I mean, I personally think working out is better for your mind. Anything else you can.
Yeah.
But no, that makes sense. Like, elite athletes are already there. So mm-hmm. you're going to get more benefit in helping. More out of what you're doing, we're helping with those average Joes than you are with athletes.
It's for me, it's a few things. So number one, it's just more rewarding, right? Helping somebody who shows up with abs and is super disciplined get nicer abs is cool, sure. But it's not my thing. It doesn't give me that like sense of fulfillment. Right?
So the like the bodybuilding coaching, like someone
it's not for me. Not someone calls me, hey Trevor, I'm looking to get on stage. Like we got people on staff, great at that. Cool. Yeah. I'm gonna refer you to to this guy or that girl, but it's not for me. Like, but hey, you're a dad, you got two kids, wife, like own your own business or don't or whatever, and things went south after college and you gained 50 pounds and like clothes don't fit and your energy fucking sucks and you're looking ahead of your trajectory. And your family health history and things aren't looking so good. Not proud of yourself. Like I'm here to help. Like that does it for me for sure. It's a ripple effect. Like it really is. Cause I know that their kids are going to benefit from that. Their employees, spouses, everyone around them. And that's really rewarding for me. And so that's what I'm focused on right now. And it's the mindset thing is so big because, most people know at least a handful of things that like they should be doing. Right.
Do you miss the in-person aspect of it?
No.
I mean, you get it that with jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, exactly.
It was really hands-on. Very hands-on.
Yeah. Couldn't be any more hands-on, yeah.
I should have seen what he was doing to me this morning. I got a gee burn on this side of my face.
Yeah, and that was just demoing. We weren't even sparring.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to be nicer. What did you ask?
I made that comment to him. I was like, damn, Trevor is really tough on you when he's demoing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't like being
used. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll be honest, I was getting burnt out on it. Yeah. I was getting really burnt out on it. And did it for so long. I mean, I did it all through my 20s. Split shift, ass crack of dawn, train this many people, go home, nap, or do jiu-jitsu. Eat lunch, come back, train more people. I got burnout on it and I was really way more interested in like the fat loss side of things. Like at a certain point, here's what it is. I did not master training by any means. There are people who are way better coaches at that than me. Like that's their thing, right? But I got to a point with training people in person where the type of people that I really wanted to help, I knew enough about training. I knew what they needed. It was simple. I knew enough. I understood enough. I didn't need to go any more in depth on the training to help these people out more, but I needed to go more in depth on the nutrition, the mindset, everything outside of the lifting. And so that was the path that I took and I kept what I knew in training side of things. And now I just like, okay, all right, my clients are struggling with sleep. Let me understand enough about that, right? Without getting ridiculous to add that and then, so on and so forth. So I don't miss it because what I do now, it's just more effective. I wasn't changing lives like this when I was in person. I wasn't getting these transformations, these results. They're just not even close. A few people, but they had to, they had to have the other side, the other things dialed in, or they had to train really, really frequently with a coach and spend a lot of money. So more cost effective what I do, right?
Yeah.
It's better results. It's way more flexible for me as a father.
Yeah.
And just as a human being, my schedule is way better. I can work from anywhere in the world other than I got to be there to teach jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, yeah. And Wi-Fi.
So it's just, there's just no downsides. It's better for me as a career, and I'm getting people better results.
Makes complete sense.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest. I mean, most of my business has gone virtual. Yeah. And I think it's great, especially the time management aspect of it. You're not having to try and coordinate schedules with multiple other people. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So do I miss it? No. Is there a part of me that wouldn't mind doing like the teensiest bit of it just to stay sharp? Maybe, but
yeah.
I'm good. No, I teach jiu-jitsu in person, and that's
funny. Enough.
Yeah. That's my social interaction.
Yeah.
All of it.
Well, you mentioned the principle of iteration. Mm-hmm. What exactly does that mean to you?
Yeah, so iteration to me is a lot of what we talked about earlier, which is that for example, in jiu-jitsu, you teach a beginner's class, right? And people come in, and some people start out here, and they're going to here. Other people start out here, they're going to there, and it's okay. Everyone starts at different levels. But ultimately, like, wherever someone starts, we know that they want to make progress, right? And we know that making mistakes and screwing up and failing and getting frustrated and all that stuff is like, it's unavoidable, right? And so for me, iteration is just truly reframing those things to where like their feedback, their data, you kind of want them to a certain extent. Like, you really want to be the person who goes into something new and just owns it and like beats the instructor. Wow. Like, no, then jiu-jitsu wouldn't be worth a shit. I tell people that all the time when they like a new student comes in and like, you know, you hop in, you beat them up or whatever, like easily, like you should. It's like, I got beat up easily my first time. And they go, oh, they're like almost pissed.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't do better. It's like, and I always like reframe it like, hey, jiu-jitsu is supposed to be like really legit. If you came in here with no experience and you like scored on me or submitted me or did anything to me, I've been training for like 12 years, like I would just leave if I was you.
Yeah.
Like, I'd What's say jiu-jitsu is fucking useless.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but so in jiu-jitsu and in nutrition and personal training, like when I start with somebody, I like to frame it as like, hey, this is your plan. This is version 1.0, right? Meaning we are redesigning this plan when we go out in the real world and apply it, right? Or like, I forget who said this, but they said like, when you, like you get your nice your nutrition plan or your training plan or whatever, and then you got to go out and do it with your schedule and your family and your environment and stuff like that. And that is, someone said it's like rubbing up your plan against reality, like the friction of that. And it's like, and then they go and maybe they don't do nearly as good as they thought they were going to do with their nutrition or their training or whatever. And let's be honest, most people wear their heads at, like they think, oh, I should be better at this. I shouldn't be making mistakes. I shouldn't be like, oh, I binge ate. I did this. I did that. I missed my workouts. Like, it's there.
Let it snowball.
Yes. And iteration is about testing, training, not just testing, right? Practicing, not just competing. Just like in jiu-jitsu, if you know the white belts who are there to just compete every single night, if they're testing themselves, right? And they don't get very good if they're not there, like just training and then once in a while testing themselves, right? So for me, iteration is just a principle that, you know, every company uses, right? This, shout out,
is it Newtonic.
Newtonic. This was not their first draft.
No.
Right?
Very open about that. Yeah, yes. It took them like 14 tries, okay. 14 different so formulas this might before be, they got
exactly,
it or something.
Exactly. That's iteration.
Yeah.
Every company does it.
Get
and
better
so,
and better,
yeah,
different.
He didn't go in. Versions. He didn't go into that with all this money, saying, "All right, we're gonna make this energy drink, and version one, it needs to knock everybody's socks off and be perfect. If not, I quit." We wouldn't be drinking this here,
right?
It's a tasty peach drink. Okay? Mm-hmm. So it is, but so it's that same principle, right? Yeah. It's, you just gotta okay. It's like it's not try, fail, and then quit, which is what everybody does, and ironically that makes their whole journey a lot longer, right? I said this recently on, you know, one of my posts, but it's true. Is like, the amount of time between the last time you quit and the next time you try, it might be months and years. Like that actually
makes, you never quit.
Yeah, it makes it way longer. It doesn't seem like that. Like you seem like you're saving yourself time, but you're not, right? Not if you do 10 diets in 10 years and 10 attempts and you gain 10 more pounds every time, which right. A lot of people do. So yeah, so for me, iteration is a way to make you fail-proof because day one, I have to tell my clients when I onboard, I'm like, hey, you can't fail. You can't fuck this up. Like the only way I can't get you there and you can guarantee that you're not going to get your results, and this is not going to make it easier, but it's like, just don't quit. Don't quit. Take that off the table, and then you don't have to make that decision every time you fuck up. So what do? You go out, you try it, and then you come back after week one, and either things went really well or they went okay, or you come back and you didn't do anything, you found it all too hard, you did terrible. And then we go, either way, like, we got data now. Figure it out. So it's like, okay. And then just problem solve. Be solution focused. I don't want to talk too much about your problems. I don't want to talk about, you know, why your kids are making it hard for you to go to the gym. I don't want to talk about why, you know, you keep missing your workouts, you keep it distracted, or you keep doing this or that. Like let's not talk about the problem past a certain point. Let's identify it, but then let's not just keep talking about that and feeling bad about that. We don't need it, right? But like, what's the solution? Let's be really like overly logical here. And like, let's be like, if you're going to run into this situation again, and you are, what's something we could do to do a little bit better next time? Not perfect, but better. And that's it. So like, I don't care what mistakes people run into or how they think they screwed up or whatever. Like, as long as they're willing to communicate and just keep going, right? It's because you got to zoom out, right? Yeah. In the context of like, oh, a day or a week or whatever, like same things seem so such a big deal and dramatic. But when you zoom out, it's like, okay, you had a couple bad days here, but like you've just, I still deal with this with people who I've been working with for months, is they'll have a really rough weekend, especially around the holidays. And then, you know, their check-in's kind of negative and they're kind of beating up themselves. And then I come in with just a little more neutral perspective and I pull up their track and I zoom out and I go, hey, you had 12 weeks leading up to the screw up where you absolutely crushed it. Like, let's zoom out a little bit. Like, it's a drop in the ocean. It doesn't matter, right? So people got to zoom out a little bit on their timeline and really, really think about the long game here. And also, you know.
It just goes back to our society wanting that quick fix.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quick everything.
Yep. And it's funny because, like, my son does iteration. Your kids do iteration.
Yeah.
Like, sure. If he would have, like, he's trying to ride his little balance bike right now.
Yeah.
You know? And if the first time he got on it and he fell over and he just goes, you know what? I don't think biking's for me. I'm just going to, you
walk.
Know, yeah, I shouldn't have failed that. Like, no, he doesn't give a shit. He'll just keep trying. He doesn't have that sense of self yet. Right. He doesn't have that ego, that guilt, that shame, that pressure that we put on ourselves. So, you know, it's funny how easily we forget that. And I think things like jiu-jitsu or sports as adults, like, can kind of bring us back to that and remind us, like, you're not supposed to be good at everything. Like, just get better, and you're not supposed to be perfect. So yeah, that principle has been really, really a nice reframe for me. Cause then you go, you're not the problem. The plan is the problem. The plan needs to be modified. Now, sometimes, don't get me wrong, the plan is perfect and we just need to work on the mindset and adherence and like, what's the end, instead of people are going to run into internal and external obstacles, right? And external obstacles we can problem solve for, right? It might be time blocking. It might be environmental. It might be having more assertive conversations with the people in your life or your coworkers. But where people, so that's fine. That's where, like, sometimes nutrition and fitness, what people need isn't even the things that they think they need. They need to learn how to be more organized, like I did. They need to learn time blocking. They need to learn
time blocking. Change.
Yeah,
change my life.
How to be really comfortable saying, hey, no, thank you.
Yes.
Right.
It's power.
Hey, you want another beer? Hey, hey, don't be lame. Like, let's have this pizza. And, you know, in some contexts, having that pizza is going to align with your goals and values. Other times it's not. And you got to be like super comfortable saying, hey, no, thank you. And not explaining yourself, not saying, oh no, I'm going to diet. I can't. That sounds weak. You're going to crack.
Yeah.
Right. So, anyways, external obstacles, we all have them, right? What is it? Is it time? Is it money? Is it a skill we need to learn? That's fine. We can problem solve that. Solution focused. And then use iteration, we can design your environment, design your schedule, influence the people around you, and we can get better. The problem that most people don't realize is they're trying to solve internal problems the way they solve external problems. And what I mean by that is, like, all of the uncomfortable, undesirable, like, thought patterns, sensations, impulses, emotions, beliefs, stories that, you know, whether it's someone's having like cravings or hunger or whatever, which we can mitigate, but like, it's okay, right? We don't have to treat those as something that we have to wait until it goes away, or we have to make it go away, or we have to act on it. Like, that's where people get into trouble, right? Every little thing that pops into the head, they try to problem solve it, right? Or I don't feel motivated, therefore I won't go to the gym, or I won't do this, and then they're just waiting. They're waiting for lightning to strike, which is kind of what motivation is, right? You can try to generate it yourself. You can hype yourself up, but like, we need something more stable than those kind of fleeting things that we can't, you know, necessarily control. So yeah, that's the biggest shift for me right now, is like being like really practical, problem solving like external obstacles, right? And practicing, which everything's practice for these clients, right? It's like, here's one of our coaches on staff used the term reps recently with coaching stuff. And I was like, that's like, that makes sense. You do reps in jiu-jitsu,
right?
Or anything, yeah, really.
Reps and everything.
Go get reps. Yeah. It's like, hey, son, go get reps on that balance bike. Like,
I say the same thing. And like, I was talking to my broker at my real estate company yesterday, and we're talking about a guy, you know, bringing someone on as like a team member, you know, to help me. And yeah, it's like, I remember when I first started, I just wanted to get as many reps as possible, get as many transactions under my belt just so I could figure this thing out.
Yeah, exactly. And,
you know, I just kind of look at that, but you can look at that for anything,
yep,
you know, whether it's jiu-jitsu, fitness, you know, whatever your job is. I mean, but riding a balance bike, it's, yeah, just all reps.
Yep. And so now applying that to things like nutrition and training and like just little lifestyle habits, like, for example, there are people who I start working with who have never gone to a restaurant and ordered the healthier choice. They've just never done it, right? They know that it's probably a good thing to do sometimes, depending on the context, or a lot of the times, depending on the context, but they've never done it. So it's like, okay, let's go get some reps. Like, by the time you have done that 10 times, you get it easier.
Right.
First couple times, yeah, it's like you're gonna get a little pushback, but like, go get 10 reps of, hey, you know, stopping after two beers, right? Go get 10 reps of not finishing your plate. Or perfect example is like, I have two clients recently. One, we kind of talked about like, she was really associating every time she got a little buzzed or a little too drunk, she associated that with, every time I drink and drink too much, I binge eat, right? I come home and I become a snack monster. She used that term. And that was the evidence that she had every time that is what happened. But it's like, okay, how can we, like, we could say, okay, yeah, just never drink again. Like, that's not going to work, right? Yeah. But it's like, okay, we know that it's a possibility that you could go out and drink the same amount and not come home and snack, but you've never done it. Like, let's go get reps. And now at this point, this is months ago, she's done it probably four or five times. The first time, she was really excited. She kind of shocked herself. She was like, wow, I got drunk and I didn't come home and eat everything and nothing happened. And I was fine. I still had the impulse, but like, I just sat with it. I noticed it. I named it. I called it out and I let it be there. I didn't treat it as a problem to solve. And then rep two, she's like, wow, did it again. Now she's like, eventually after a few reps, it's not just something you're trying anymore. It's something that you are. That's who you are. She is the person who can get drunk and not binge eat, right? Another guy, same thing. He's like, hey man, I really like having my edibles at night, but every time I do, I get snacky and I blow my diet. Okay. Same thing for him. All right. Yeah. You can, his plan was like, stop edibles. Like, good. Probably do it. But you like them? You want to keep doing them? Like, I don't give a shit. Eat your edibles. But let's go get some reps. And now it's not a thing. He doesn't, he could if he wants to. It's not a rule that he can't eat when he's high, but he doesn't have to anymore. He still feels the impulse. He just lets it be there. Again, it's not a, we get into a lot of trouble when we treat every little thought that comes up as real and true, and we obey it, or we try to resist it or make it go away. And that is where people get into trouble with food and alcohol and any vice. They just, you want to feel better now and you'll deal with the consequences later. And that's kind of where a lot of people get stuck.
I was gonna say, or you can just pull his act, use it as a performing answer to more food.
Well, yeah, because I'm eating a ton of calories, right? I'm trying to gain some weight right now.
Yeah.
I'm eating 3,300 calories right now.
And, nice.
And, but there's been nights where I get home and I just didn't eat well during the day and I've got 2,200 calories and it's seven. I just got both kids to bed and it's 8:30 and I'm like, oh, you know, I'm like, I got a lot of food to eat. That's a lot of beef and rice.
So in that situation, yes, if you were my client in that situation, I'd say, hey, ma'am, that's okay. One day is not going to matter, but like, what went wrong on the front end of your day? So you don't show up at night with 2,200 calories left. It's like, yeah, you can eat it.
Yeah, and I did.
I'd rather you just say, all right, this day was kind of fucked. I'm going to, let's problem solve that.
Sure.
Let's just organize our day a little bit better so that this doesn't happen to me again. Right. Because if it keeps people, what people do too is they'll run into like obstacles at work. Like, oh man, every time this person, you know, around in the break room, we have this or that, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Cupcakes come out.
Yeah. And they go, oh, just, you know, kind of caught me off guard. And they'll say that like five times. And then you go, hey, man, this happens every week. It's not a surprise, not catching you off guard. You know, it's going to keep happening. So like part of your life, not going to go away. Let's like make it better. How can we solution problem solve that? But yeah, gaining weight, that's a tough one.
It's tough. I've been eating a ton for like,
I wish I had that problem.
Yeah.
And I'm like barely scratching 180 right now.
White rice, brother.
White rice.
A lot of rice.
Ground beef. That's cheeseburger bowls is what I make. It's like 300 grams of cooked rice and 8 ounces of beef and 2 servings of cheese. And, you know, it's just like,
it's
ketchup and pickles.
People think it's going to be all super fun, but like pretty hard.
It is.
Eating that much sucks.
It does. It's awful. You know, like sometimes, you know, it does get not fun.
Yeah.
But I'm feeling good. I've definitely put on a little bit of muscle. Yeah. So feeling good. I feel strong.
That's, you know, with jujitsu, athletes, hobbyists, like whatever you consider yourself, like at a certain point, once you're at a certain level of leanness, like you're not overweight, and you're thinking about weight classes and stuff like that. Or you even just look around the gym and you go, okay, like where do I stack up weight class wise to people around me? Because like the lighter you are, the more people that are above you, and
the more people, more you're a victim.
Yeah, it is. It's true. So it's funny. Like
Revive, if you're below 200 pounds, it's
victim weight. Yeah, that is that way over there. But at a certain point, if you're like, you're kind of at a certain level of leanness, you're kind of like stuck with the decision. Like, okay, I could keep getting leaner and lighter and like doing lighter weight classes, or like, okay, put on some fucking muscle. Let me go up a weight class. Like, and that's usually a really good path. Like you see so many competitors, high level competitors who like, you look at them 10 years ago, they were way lighter. Right. And so, I mean, that's why I used to compete at lightweight.
Oh yeah.
It'd be like, when I first met my wife, she always talks about how freaking skinny I was. I was like 167, 168. And it was the leanest I'd ever been. But like, when you're lower weight class, like now in the gym, even though I was an instructor, it was like, now there's X amount of people in the gym more that are just like bigger than me, and it sucks. And I can't pressure pass as much, and they're moving me around more. It's like, I'm fast, but now they're moving me around more. I'm not as stable. So I like being a little bit bigger.
For sure.
Yeah. Makes life a little easier as you get older.
I feel like armor, you know,
it is,
you know, and I look at it that way. Yep. You know, I'm like, the more armor I build up around my joints and bones and stuff, the stronger I'm going to be.
Yeah.
I'm like more durable. I'm gonna say.
Yep. And you got to take advantage of like your muscle building years, right? Cause it does get not impossible.
Yeah. And that was another thing. I was like, you know, I'm in my early 30s. Yep. I gotta, you know, if I'm going to try to put on some muscle, like this would be the time to do it.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's going to get harder as the older I get. So.
Well, yeah. And the point I really try to get across to people with muscle is like, it's really easy to maintain. Like crazy easy, hard to get, slow. It's hard to lose, like genuinely hard to lose. So like, people, I'm not huge, I'm not jacked by any means, but like, people are surprised sometimes when, you know, I tell them that for like 15 years I've been lifting no more than 3 times a week.
That's surprises me.
Yeah,
for how strong you are.
There you go. So, and honestly, for the last 2 years, like, or several years, just kiddo and stuff like that. Sometimes it was two. Now I've changed my schedule around. Like, I'm really consistent this last month, and I'm really seeing some good gains because I always get three in a calendar week. I was always in a three-day program, but in a seven-day period, I might have gotten two. Like, really good quality sessions, but yeah, it's once you build it and you have it, it's pretty easy to keep. And so, yeah, I urge people.
So three,
everybody,
three lifting, three jiu-jitsu sessions a week, roughly your training schedule.
Yes, minimum. That third session on Friday is usually my shortest one because I'm just with whoever's
with me.
I could pop over to Revive sometimes. I do, but sometimes I've like it's awkward because I've like gotten a good 30-minute session in with somebody and I'm like, all right, I got better today, got a good little workout, and then it's like, all right, do I really go sit in my car for 30 minutes, get cold,
yeah,
and then
get
go
cold and then go warm up
fight
again.
The 300-pound guys at Revive. Yeah. So, but what I try to do, depending on my schedule, it's getting lighter right now with less holidays and stuff, is I'll pop over to Revive on Saturday once in a while. So then I get like 4 1/4 session. That's perfect. Like that, I can prep for a competition with that, but I can't do it just three.
Do you have any competitions coming up?
No, work's getting a little wild right now. So it's just, I should be the type of person, I've said this plenty before, but I should be the type of person who can just like not put so much pressure on a competition and just like, you know, these guys, they just jump in like every weekend, or they jump in with, you know, no notice and just be like, I'll go test myself. I should be doing that just to get more experience. But no, I do like to run a good, like at least 8 to 12 week, like really prep for it. And I get really focused.
Yeah. I remember last time.
Yeah. I get really, really focused. I turn the intensity up. Like everything's dials, right? So like my jiu-jitsu dial goes up and then like other things like dial down a little bit. Which sometimes it's okay, and that's when I'll compete. But other times it's like right now, like I can't dial down work. I can't dial down this other stuff. So I won't. So I don't have any competitions planned unless Kyle Sweet talks me into something. And at this point, you know, I want to do stuff I can drive to. You know, drive down to Memphis. Let's go to Nashville. Let's go to KC. Let's go to Chicago. That's kind of what I'm focused on. I like to do like one or two a year, and then if they keep doing the St. Louis one.
Yeah, I plan on doing that one.
Yeah.
Would you ever do one of those super fights like CXPJ or anything like that?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I've done them. I've done a few in the past. Back when it was like Fuji World Pro. I think I've lost every fucking one of them.
I've lost every one I've done.
Yeah.
But Adam's doing another one here in May, and I was like, I mean, I'll do it if you got a guy my size. I'll do it.
Yeah.
I just gotta fucking get a win under my belt. I'm 0-2 now.
At a certain point with those invite onlys too, like, you know, you keep going, you keep losing, and it's like, man, I shouldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
if I lose this next one, you get
5 losses of invite onlys,
yeah,
and it's like, hang it up.
Just a hobbyist.
Yeah, put yourself in the kids with the kids opening.
Right. I always do. You know, I've done decent in tournaments. You know,
yeah.
It's just these one off matches.
Yeah, you were that last one. You were doing pretty well. You just pulled that funky ass move on you.
You're like scarf hold.
There's always
Americana.
That jiu-jitsu is. There's always that Hail Mary chance of some. They've got one move that's kind of silly that they hit in the gym and all their teammates know it.
Yep.
But unless you got footage on them, and you know, and someone says, "Hey, look out! That guy's got a great loop choke." You don't know, and you get caught in it, and it's stupid. But and maybe in the training room you beat that guy 10 times, but like he catches you, you know. And for me, I've competed a decent amount, not relative to like other people, but I was never a great competitor. Just wasn't in anything. But this last time was my best mindset wise. I was in a really, really good place, and it kind of showed me like, okay, I can win these things. Like
especially at black belt.
I just need more experience. Yeah, I did really, really well. I started off each match with a takedown and winning like 5-0, almost both matches. And then I just, you know, I find a way to lose. That's who I am. It's what I do. But I felt good mentally. And I just, you know, I look at some of these competitors I was going against. And I'm like, they compete every
weekend.
Yeah. Forever. At least twice a month for years and years and years. And this is my first black belt. I didn't compete a brown belt at all. Like, what do I expect?
Right. You know?
Should I go out and beat these guys when I'm not competing at all? Like, probably not. You know? Just like, I always think of like guys like Mark Vives, who
every
nobody
weekend.
Competes more than him. And yeah, if some like guy his age in his division, like who just competes once a year, good luck.
That dude's out there every weekend.
Yeah.
And he signs up the second that the tournament is available, just so that everybody knows that he was the first to sign up. You know,
yeah,
like
exactly.
That's his.
Yeah. And you can't really say, okay, I don't deserve to beat this guy. Like, that's not help. Like, I'm going out there, I'm in my head, like, I'm going to win this. Like, if my mind suggests anything different than that, or it's like, oh, hey, this guy's really good. It's okay. Go ahead and lose. You did good. Get some points. My mind will suggest, my mind's like a little bitch most of the time. But instead of trying to make that stuff go away, now I'm just like, instead of just listening to my mind, I'm like talking to my mind. Like, and so one thing that I've learned in the last year is just like a little technique that I thought was really silly until I did it for my last jiu-jitsu competition. It's just like every time that my mind would, I'd visualize a match coming up, and in my mind would, it's not something you can control. My mind would feed me the image of the other guy getting his hand raised, or like me shooting a takedown and it missing, or me like just finding like losing. Cause that's what the evidence I've got for a lot of my competitions. I'm not that good of a competitor in the past, but now this time around, those things still came up, but instead of like trying to like, okay, breathe and like ignore it, you know, it's like, I go, well, thank you, mind, but that's not what's going to happen. Like, thank you. But
this is, I'm going to put this image in of what I wanted.
Yeah. I'll say, thank you. That's not very helpful, but I'm going to do this. Yeah.
That's amazing what your mind can control. I know like when I was playing baseball, especially when I was starting, cause we knew pretty much what your scouting reports for series. And I'd sit there the night before a start and just visualize my attack through the lineup, up and down and all that stuff. And it's amazing how much that can help, how much that can change, what your thought patterns are heading into it.
It's the difference maker.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yep. And I think that as a coach in both jiu-jitsu and like, you know, helping people with like their fat loss goals and stuff, I think the reason I've gravitated towards so much studying of the mindset in the last few years is one, it's what people need, right? The stuff that helps people get lean and get results, really quite simple, despite what
really
social
works.
Media seems. Yeah. Yeah.
What really works for fat loss?
So, yes. Let's hear this. We'll come back to it. We'll come back to it. But the stuff that works is really, really simple, right? And so I've gravitated towards it because one, mindset, like, gets people to do the simple shit consistently and get results, like, not to be fancy. But two, it's like, that's what I struggled with most forever was my mindset, right? Around everything. But I wasn't aware of it. My mind was just racing all day long. So much that I my face was just always tense. Like people, like, I have a bitch face anyway, resting bitch face, but it was always just tense and like, I just looked mad all the time. People didn't want to approach me. It wasn't because I was like that. It was because I was lost in thought and I had no fucking clue all day. Thinking about the future, ruminating on the past, shit I can't control. I struggled socially with even just talking to one person, two person group of people. I couldn't do it because I was, everything that I was going to say, I had to think about first. And I was thinking about, what are they thinking about what I'm saying? I'm thinking about what they're going to maybe say. And then I say the wrong thing, right? They say good morning, and I go, oh, good. I'm like, I thought he was going to say, how are you? Damn it, right? So, you know what I mean? So, like, I spent all my teens, a lot of my 20s, just completely lost in thought in my own head. Held me back, made me avoid stuff. I was, like, basically binge eating, like, living by myself in Webster Groves. Like, just started jiu-jitsu, just started working in the city. Didn't know anybody. It was kind of lonely. Drinking Budweisers and eating fucking cheesecakes at night. Like, just... and then at a certain point I was like, and just like every, to, cause that stuff helped quiet my mind. My problem was a solution. My eating shitty, my drinking, my whatever, it was a solution. It just didn't work out in the long term. It worked in the moment. Quieted my mind. I got more present. I didn't think about all the shit that was whatever my mind was doing, but it wasn't a very practical, useful solution. Right. And so at a certain point I just got really fed up. And I think I gave my brother like my Xbox. I gave him my TV, and I just started reading. Like I had been a big reader in middle school, elementary, and like I kind of stopped in high school and just started like fucking drinking with like an idiot, and continued that. And then at that point when I was living alone, I for whatever reason, don't remember how I got started, but I got back into reading, and that year changed my life. And I've just been in love with reading ever since. And it just like that was the spark for me that helped me figure out my own mind. And I went down lots of different paths. Stoicism, Zen Buddhism, like, you name it, and learned so much. And that's where that kind of, like, generalist mindset started. It's like, okay, I'm not a Stoic. I'm not a Zen Buddhist, but, like, hey, I like the stuff that they're doing here. Ooh, I like those meditation things. I like mindfulness. Let me pull that. That's cool. I like a sphere of control, Stoicism. Let me use that, right? And so on and so forth. And you just, like, put something that's more practical together for yourself that you like. And, like, I wasn't yet applying it to my coaching because it was just all in-person training, right? And so I, like, all the philosophy, the psychology, all the reading I was doing, like, it helped me so much, but I just thought it was free, you know? I didn't talk about it to many people. I didn't help anybody with it. But at a certain point, I started to see, like, hey, you know what? Maybe this is, like, really going to help people with, like, their nutrition and stuff. And so that's why I love what I do now. It's because it's such a big part of it, and I get to, like, that was something that was just for me, and now it's helping other people too.
Yeah, I think you just posted a picture of the books that you read maybe this past year. I sent it to Zach. I'm like, all right, we're going to add some of these to the book.
Yeah.
List. We got a book club that we do. So.
I like to post little stupid quotes from books in the morning sometimes.
That's great.
Good. And that's the thing too with social media is like, if I'm going to do it consistently, I got to really, yes, I want to think about what my ideal client wants and needs, and I got to speak to them and speak to their story and their journey, but I got to post shit that I'm interested in too. And so like, yeah, I like to share book quotes.
Yeah, right?
It's great. Sometimes people go, oh, hey, what is this? And then they read it and they, you know, it helps them. But yeah, I think that post was like one of my coaches on staff was like, hey, looking to get back into some personal development reading. What are your top 5-ish books for 2024? And I had that. I love that question.
Yeah. Right? I was going to ask, I was like, do you have a favorite that you.
So I think for you guys, I think one that you guys should just based on everything you guys are into and what you talk about on the show, one I think you would really, really like is called Arete. Mm. Yeah. Okay. It's a fairly new book. It's not something you guys are going to crush in a couple weeks and have a episode about. It's like a Bible.
Thick boy.
Yeah. It's 451 little mini micro chapters.
Gotcha.
Like okay. Just, but yeah, it's cool. I think you guys will like it. So that's what I would recommend for you guys. Yeah. I gifted that to Kyle. I've gifted that book like multiple times. So yeah, that and then, okay, so back to your question.
Yes. So what really worked for fat loss, Trevor? What's bullshit? What works?
Yeah. So it is confusing, right?
Sure. Yeah. Do I do keto?
Yeah.
You know, Ozempic?
Yeah. Yeah. So all mindset stuff aside. So I like to think of things, if you want to really simplify things, it's with nutrition, for example, you're looking at food, quality, quantity, and timing, right? So those three elements, and it's a little more nuanced than that, but ultimately, a lot of nutrition strategies, I'm going to bring this back to jiu-jitsu, promise. A lot of nutrition strategies fall into manipulating just one of those elements and then going all in on it. For example, fasting, do you think that goes all in on quality, food quality, quantity, or timing?
Quantity.
Timing.
Right? It is manipulating quantity via
timing,
right? So it goes all in on that, right? So it's a strategy. It's not a principle, right? Whole 30, something like that, or like paleo or whatever, they're going all in on quality. Right, they're saying, "Hey, no processed foods, no this, no that, zero fucking fun," and that can work, right? But again, it's going all in on just one of those elements. And then there's like people who like track with like MyFitnessPal, but they don't pay much attention. They're just hitting the numbers, which can work. It does work.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah, it does work. But not a lot of focus on quality or timing or anything like that. And it works, but you know, that's more on the end of the spectrum of like, if it fits your macros, which is like, hey, yeah, you want fucking Pop-Tarts for breakfast?
Pop-Tarts and protein shakes?
Yeah. You can get there and the numbers can look good on paper, but you can feel horrible and be hungry as shit, right? Have gross poops, right? Pop-Tart poops.
Oh yeah.
So anyways, a lot of dietary strategies go all in on one of those things. And the way I relate it back to jiu-jitsu for you, Zachary, is it's kind of like when you work with an instructor or you study an instructor and they understand, like, for example, the principles of open guard. Like, Chris Paynes is a great example, right? You go do his seminar, the guy can give you the principles of open guard, and all the open guards follow those rules, right? So you can be a reverse de la Hiva guy. You can be a spider guard guy, right?
And tarantula.
Yeah, you can be a specialist. Like, you can work on that. That's a strategy of open guard. But usually, there are those, like, invariable things about that guard that fit into those larger principles. And that's how nutrition is, where everyone's focused on, like, individual strategies that do work, especially if it's, like, sustainable for somebody and enjoyable, right? Plenty of people love carnivore, keto, Whole30, vegan. Like, fine. It all works, right? Not going to shit on any of them. But it's, why do they work, right? What's the actual principles that, like, they all follow, right? And so the way we kind of teach it is with influence by Eric Helms, the nutrition pyramids, right? It's just like a pyramid at the base. And at the base, it's not grains, right? Not 6 to 11 servings of grains. The base is just total, it's just energy balance, right? Yes, you hear it. It's played out. It's cliche. You don't like hearing it. Calories in, calories out. Not that simple, right? Yes, hormones play a role. Yes, a lot of factors play into influencing those two things. But, like, any diet that works for fat loss, let's just talk about fat loss, right? Not talking about health. Not talking about ingredients, right? Talking about fat loss. And so that principle matters most. So if I'm working with somebody and they have a metric tracker and they've got, okay, we're tracking your average calories. Like, you track your macros, yeah, right? So if you just said, Hey, Trevor, I'm looking to lose 20 pounds. It's like, that calorie column, assuming your tracking is accurate, that's going to be the number one, like, big picture thing that's going to influence it the most. The biggest percentage of your fat loss results are going to come from that. Do you have to track to get into a calorie deficit or an energy deficit? No, it's a tool, right? People create calorie deficits through skipping meals and fasting, stripping out all the processed food, stripping out all food except fucking beef and eggs or whatever people like, or eating cow testicles or whatever the fuck. But if they're losing body fat, it's not magic, right? Not because they cut out carbs, not because they cut out seed oils. It creates an energy deficit, right? In the context of other things. So that's just, they've reduced the amount of calories coming in total, right? Whether consciously through tracking or unconsciously. That's important too, right? Because for some people who aren't ready to track or it's not appropriate for them, they can create an energy deficit too, but through more unconscious methods. And they might have to lean a little bit harder on food quality to unconsciously drop their calories or lean on timing, right? So that makes sense? Yeah. So that's like the principle.
Yeah.
That principle, that's like the open guard principle. That principle applies to all that other shit people are preaching, right? So if they say, oh, like, this diet's the best for fat loss, it's like, yeah, well, it does it. Get you into an energy deficit. Yes. Right. And then from there, then, like, that's a big one. Right. And so as long as you've got that, then we can either maintain, lose, or gain weight just by that principle alone. It's so powerful. But that's not enough. That doesn't look at the, like, what your food is, when you eat, your macronutrient breakdown. So the next level up would be kind of like your actual macronutrients, right? Your protein, your carbs, and fats all added up. Cool.
Your calories.
Yeah. Yeah. And then alcohol is kind of that fourth macro, but more so for others, sure, some than others, right? But yeah. So then that's kind of the next most important thing is if, like, okay, cool. Yeah. We've got, you're in an energy deficit, but if you're having 10 grams of protein a day, like, I'm pretty concerned with how hungry you're going to be. And are we retaining muscle? And are you getting much out of your training, right? How do you feel? So from there, it's like, okay, let's get, like, that's most important. Calories, get your protein in order. Let's keep as much muscle as possible. Give you a chance to build muscle, right? If the energy deficit isn't too big. So, like, those two things matter most. And so, like, if somebody, you know, comes to me and they want to do keto or they want to do carnivore, it's like, okay, yeah, if you total calories are good and you're hitting enough protein, like, it's going to work and it's sustainable for you. Feel good enough. You're not super hungry, right? You're not blowing it all the time. You're probably going to get great results. It's totally fine. Right. And so the next the next kind of priority is like, yes, like carbs and fats, right? And ratios. But where people go wrong there is if calories and protein is matched, then carbs and fats is like highly preferential. Doesn't matter that much, right? So anyone saying, okay, oh, you have to go low carb, you have to go like low fat or whatever, it's like, not really. Calorie matched, right? Again, that's the problem though. That energy energy deficit thing, it's tough because not everybody tracks, so it's hard to consciously manipulate it. That's why people start just cutting things out and doing this and that, because they're going to get that energy deficit one way or another, but it's not a conscious deficit, right? Whereas if you do track, and I'm not saying tracking's for everybody, it can be done really well though and made it like really effective and not an all or nothing thing. But like what's cool about it is then you, once you see the numbers, then you can go, okay, cool. Like here's about where I maintain. So I can sit here for a few weeks or months and like I have a North Star I can return to when I don't want to lose body fat anymore, right? So then you go into the cut, you create that deficit consciously, and you can go in and out of it as you please, seasonally. Like you want to be at maintenance in the summer? Good. Do that. You want to bulk in the winter? Cool. You want to maintain, you want to lose fat in the fall and the spring? Fine. Right. But the problem when it's not a conscious manipulation of energy is like people start cutting things and then it works until it doesn't. Right. And then they've got nothing more to manipulate because they don't see the numbers. They missed the principle, right? They worked on stuff that's higher up the pyramid, and they're missing that most important thing, right? So if you're eating keto, but you're, you know, putting butter on everything and eating bacon and cheese and just your calories are sky high, like you're not necessarily going to be in an energy deficit, losing body fat.
Right? It's all about the calories.
Yeah. And so yeah, the calories, right? And then macros. And then again, carbs and fats, like it's one of those things where you don't have to go on a predominantly low fat or low carb diet. It works. People do genuinely prefer one or the other. If you're training jujitsu, if you're lifting weights, stuff like that, let's lean towards a little bit lower fat, higher carb approach. You're going to get better results. You're going to have better performance. You're going to feel better. You're probably going to get more fiber, more micronutrients in general, from your fruits and your veggies and your, you know, starchy veggies, all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't matter that much. So like one strategy is just like, if you think about it, okay, keep your protein static, get enough, don't change it ever. Get a base of fruits and veggies for your micros and your fiber. Keep those, don't change them ever. And then from there, it's like, you know, distributing carbs and fats, you know, kind of however you like. But one thing that works really well too is like, if you're going to have a high fat meal, make it low carb. And have a high carb meal, make it lower fat. The problem people get into when they're not tracking is it's hard to create a balanced meal that's moderate carb and moderate fat without consciously measuring and tracking, right? It's hard. Yeah. Like people worry about carbs, but it's like most of people's favorite carbs are also paired up with fats.
Yeah.
They pair up. Yeah. Either it's a processed food.
Or, no, it's.
Yep.
Or yeah. French fries.
Yeah. No one's going around just eating fucking bread. Right,
just
you dip it in your oil. You put your butter on it at the restaurant. Like, you know, it's same thing with like, not that many people are going around just eating plain pasta.
Right. Nobody's right? just eating sauce. White rice with nothing on it. You know,
yeah,
you're just eating bowls of white rice.
Yeah.
or whatever
so like,
it is.
That combination is like super rewarding, right?
Yeah,
and so in there are certain contexts, it's appropriate to like, yeah, to go for the higher calorie, the combo. But yeah. So people don't have to predominantly go with like, oh, I have to go low carb or I have to go low fat. Like you can do it kind of a meal by meal basis. You can have days where you train more, you go higher carbs, lower fat. Days you don't train as much, go a little higher fat, go a little lower carb, right? There's so many strategies like, but yeah, so you've got your overall energy balance has to be in order. Then we want to get like your macronutrients that support your goals and your preferences and stuff like that. And man, those are a lot of it. Like a big base of the pyramid. You know what I mean?
Sure.
After that, then, and that's, we haven't even talked about quality yet, right?
Right.
Then you get into like quality and timing and like stuff like that. That's kind of above that. And then like once people get, again, whether they're tracking or not, like it's obviously way easier when you're tracking because then you can get very consciously manipulate those first two things. And people who are consciously tracking those first few things and getting them right have more flexibility on when they eat, what they eat, stuff like that, right?
That's currently
they can get away more with more.
So yeah. I do the tracking, do all the quality of the food, and everything like that. Now it's when do I eat
yeah.
and what do I eat
yeah.
at the time. So, you know, the biggest thing is when I'm working out. So told, hey, protein and carbs heading into the workout mm-hmm. afterwards. And then, so like towards the end of the day, trying to limit the amount of carbs I have as I get closer to bed.
Yep.
Vice versa, if I'm working out at night, then it's going to be, or if I have hockey or I get back into jiu-jitsu when hockey's over, it's going to be having those carbs leading up into the workout and afterwards.
Yeah.
So
yep.
yeah, that's been the hardest part for me
yep.
is the timing of it.
And can you see how, like, if you had just started, if like your coach, whoever you're,
I'd lose my fucking mind.
Right. If they had said, all right, we got to really focus yeah. on like what you eat yeah. before your workout and how many meals a day, you'd be like, fuck. It's no, like, because it doesn't matter until you get those other things in order.
Right. They was just tracking macros. That was the first thing. Like, yeah. hey, we're going to set you up on this. This is, I want you to track it for this long. Once you get used to tracking, then we're going to start dialing it in.
Yeah.
And that's basically what we did all last year. Now this year goal is timing.
Exactly. So yeah, you're just working your way up the pyramid, yeah. right? Exactly. Yeah. And so, and there again, there you don't have to track. There are ways to manipulate this, but if you're not willing to consciously manipulate your food quantity, right, then you do have to lean harder on quality and timing, right? If someone says, "Hey, Trevor, I don't want to track," it's like, "All right, cool. Well, you need to really like you need to go like 90-10." 80-20 minimum, but like 90-10 needs to be like single ingredient, minimally processed whole foods that are difficult for you to unintentionally, accidentally overeat. Because if we're not consciously measuring, then we're relying on your hunger cues, your satiety. And so we have to focus on building meals that you're going to eat to satiety and stopping at a naturally appropriate calorie intake without tracking it, right?
Yeah, like tracking. Move. I mean, well, it's
same.
Not that hard, but
it's
I'm sure there's people out there that really struggle with it. But
it is, and then there's
more intimidating when you think about it until you actually get out the scale and you start like weighing your foods.
Yeah,
that's how it was for me at the beginning. It was like, wow, it was tough at first, like getting used to that. But now we pre-track.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Going back to the time blocking and all of that stuff, knowing how my schedule is and managing that time, knowing when I'm going to work out, having that on the calendar already, so I know that that's not going to get messed up. Obviously, mm-hmm. there's certain things. Like last week, I had a workout plan, but picked up Oliver from school early because he was sick. So
yeah.
that kind of ruined my chance of getting to the gym. But okay, once they were in bed, go to the gym in my apartment. You know, it's just not getting the actual workout that I was wanting, but still trying to get something in.
Better than nothing.
Right,
yeah.
But having that, and now like you do it the night before, all I got to do is look at my phone, be like, all right, I wake up, okay, I'm eating this right now.
Yep.
And 3 hours, all right, I'm eating this.
Yeah. Like and that's a skill that took you reps and practice to get.
It took me a long yeah. time,
but,
and I'm still working on it.
Yes, that's awesome. So that's going to pay off. So that the mantra that we use is, like, don't track what you eat. Eat what you've already tracked. Like, that's it. So here's what I'll say about tracking. So again, whether someone tracks or not, total calorie intake is the biggest percentage results. And then next, we've got macros. And like once those are sorted out, then we can dig into like, okay, what's the quality of the food? How much fiber are we taking in? Micronutrient density, like our vitamins, our minerals, like, and then, you know, when are we eating? How many meals are we eating? Are we fueling our workouts? Like then everything's above that. And that stuff really helps with not so much just the body composition change. It's going to help with like coming back to like personal preferences. It's going to make you feel better, gonna enhance your performance, gonna like health wise, like if you're getting your mic, if your food quality is better, you're gonna feel better, right? Just like there's so many other factors. Getting your timing down is gonna help you have better workouts, be more consistent, feel less hungry because your hunger and energy would be more predictable. Like that stuff matters too, but like if you're tracking, like that stuff's a little bit later and less important, right? Unless someone's advanced and they can put it all together. And then at the very tippy top, it's like supplements, yeah. right? So, where again, some people like, boom, I'm a supplement guy.
I'm a supplement
right?
guy right away.
Yeah. Yeah. So, which is fine, right? But anyway, so yes, here's the thing, guys, though, whether you want to track or not, I can tell you there are certain things that you can get in place with your food quality, your timing, your quantity, and like your schedule and stuff to make tracking way easier if you ever do want to do it, right? I can tell you who's going to hate fucking tracking. People who don't cook any of their own meals, right? People who eat out at restaurants a ton, right? People who eat at different times of the day. People who, and they just wake up and they just wing it and they'll eat when they're hungry and this and that. Yeah, they don't cook. They don't grocery shop much. They you know, they don't have a plan for their day. It's like, yeah, then tracking gets really, really stressful because then like if you're not, or another way to make tracking really suck is like, hey, be a recipe person. Make recipes every day. Oh, I'm going to make macro pizza and fucking macro ice cream. It's like, that's cool sometimes. But if like, sure. if someone says, hey, I'm going to start tracking this year. And the first thing they do is they jump online. They go macro recipes and they pull up these recipes. It's like, all right, I'm going to have Tuscan omelet with blah, 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 blah for breakfast. I'm going to have sweet and sour chicken taco fucking casserole for dinner. And it's like, and they pull it up. And now you got to be a damn scientist too. So you got to do all these measurements. There's 50 ingredients. You got to figure that out. And it's like, okay, you're probably going to hate tracking. Right? Unless you're a chef, you're probably going to hate tracking.
I think it helps. I kind of made this switch in my mind years ago, kind of when I started tracking, was like viewing food as fuel instead of, you know, I mean, there are times where food is, it's an experience, but it's, you know, most of the time it's just fuel.
Yeah.
I think that this is how I'm fueling my body for my workouts. Feeling need to just get through the day and make me feel the best I can.
Yeah. And so that's where we get into like flexibility, right? And so again, whether, and that's another thing too, someone's going to hate tracking if they're eating 30% healthy food, 70% junk food. Not going to go well. They're going to fuck it up all the time. It's going to be really hard. So, but anyways, coming back to the flexible dieting thing. So, whether someone tracks macros or not, like you need to be leaning on 80% of your weekly meals or daily intake, at least need to be geared towards your goals, right? Where people get into trouble is you can categorize like foods into like kind of three buckets, right? When someone starts, they might come to me and it's 15%. Healthy whole foods that are nutrient dense and satiating, and that's going to make them really easy, going to make it really easy for them to reach their goals, whether they're tracking or not, right? That's one bucket. We want to increase that, right? If it's low. The other bucket is fun, their favorite junky foods or drinks, their favorites. Like what's your favorite local pizza?
Probably Emo's.
Great. Do you love Emo's? Cool. So if we say yes to Emo's and keep it in your plan, can you say no to Caesars, Little Caesars?
Yeah.
There you go. Right? Cool. So, and like, what's your favorite cocktail? So on and so forth. Sure. So be specific. So we've got that other bucket is like your favorite, not only junky foods, whether it be because it's cultural, it's something you grew up eating, it's favorite local thing, like whatever favorite recipe your wife makes, like whatever, doesn't matter. You've got this bucket of your favorite foods and also significant occasions that you yourself deem to be that, like
important.
Worth it, important, weddings, memorable one. Whatever it is, promotion, could be a guy's trip, like doesn't matter. So those two buckets, right? Foods that are going to fit your goals, fuel, whatever you want to call it, your favorite foods. The problem is people have this third bucket they don't even realize, which is the foods that don't fit either. They're not really that healthy and they kind of make it hard for them to hit their goals and be satiated naturally. And they're not their favorites. They taste good, but they're okay, right? And so that's a big one. That's foods that people are just getting because they're convenient. They don't love them. Oh, I popped over to Jimmy John's. Oh, I had this bag of chips. I had this and that. And it's like, is that in your top 10, favorite 20 foods, favorite foods? It's like, oh, no, is it okay? Like,
worth it?
Like, yeah, yeah. Do you love those? Like, Cheez-Its are good, but like, do they make the cut when we start looking at things like that? It's like, no, probably not. So we want to build the first bucket up closer to 80 to 90, right? Whether you look at, hey, you've got 2,500 calories, whatever, 2,500 calories a day. Hey, 20% a day. Once you hit your protein, you hit your fiber and your micros and you eat mostly whole foods. You want to have some ice cream that lasts 20%? Fuck, have at it. I don't care. I don't care. Doesn't matter. Or another way to look at it is, hey, you're doing four meals a day, 7 days a week, 28 meals a week. 10 to 20% is 3 to 6 meals. But 3 to 6 meals, let's deviate from our list. But let's be selective, not just restrictive, right? People usually, they do diets, like I said, a whole 30 or something, where they cut, they go, it's 100, zero. And not sustainable, right? So I urge people to, if you want to think more sustainably, let's start really cutting out the shit that's like, meh, not that great. It's not memorable. It's not, you don't enjoy it. You don't feel better after. You don't, like, it's not that pleasurable or that memorable. It's not worth it to you. Like, say no to those things so you can make your favorite stuff and occasions like actually part of your plan. And then you go in, don't track or do, I don't care. Make it fit. Or just like enjoy it. Like be present, enjoy it, and then don't worry about it. Part of the plan. Right. So that's where people get in trouble is I'll go to a Mexican restaurant. Shout out Casa Mia in St. Peter's. They're the shit. But like they've got these dippable birria tacos. Fuck, they're incredible. Yeah. They're incredible.
So good.
Right. And like that's right now. And your list is going to change over time. Right.
It's in your top 10.
We're snobby now because we live in the city and we've been to good restaurants.
Sure.
When you ask, hey, Trevor, what's in your top 3 or 5 when I was in high school? Olive Garden. Yeah. Once a year. Especially, you know. So it's all relative. I get that. Right. For some people, a gas station pizza is like the shit. And that's fine. I get it.
Everybody loves some Casey's pizzas.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. That's what I had in our small town. So that's fine. Right. But let's really say yes to those things and let's start cutting out all the other shit. That's just not worth it. Right. So my example at my dippable tacos, yeah, they're pretty high calorie. Right. They're super cheesy. And so I am going to say yes to those and I'm going to enjoy the hell out of them. And I like tequila. So I'm going to have the margaritas. But when the chips and dip come out, they're good. Right.
Yeah.
But they're cheap. It's fried tortillas with salt. Here's. Right. I can get it at any store anywhere. I'm an adult. I have money. I have a car. If I want chips that bad, I can go get it. So that kind of stuff isn't worth it to me, whether I'm tracking or not. So I'll say no to the chips and dip or their bread and butter, and then I'm going to get what I want. And then maybe I say, hey, I'm going to have a skinny margarita, right? Because what do I want? I want the buzz.
Tequila.
I don't want the heartburn from the syrup.
Right.
Right. So just those little changes make a big difference, right? And I come away feeling like, fuck yeah, I have my tequila, I have a little buzz, I have my favorite tacos, I'm good, right? Just like I love Clementine's ice cream. Shout out Clementine's.
Yeah.
It's my favorite. Absolutely my favorite. So I got no problem saying no to other opportunities that come up during the week because I know that that's part of the plan. We're going to put it on the calendar and put it in your plan, right? That's another thing to get reps on. If you've never like planned out a junky food and made it part of the plan and gone and eaten it, like do that, right? You put down, hey, we're going to go, hey, family ice cream outing at your favorite place, right? On Friday. And then Karen from accounting wants to go to fucking Raising Cane's for lunch on Tuesday. You'd be like, oh, no, thank you. I'm going for ice cream on Friday, right? So that's kind of how I think about flexibility. And that's been really empowering for people because there are no off-limit foods. And anyone who tells you there are is stupid, unless you're like deathly allergic or something like that. So that's super helpful. And just bringing up that 80 to 90, like improving that. Rather than cutting out your favorites, like let's bring up that 80 to 90. Let's cut out all the shit you don't care about.
No? Totally. Well, we are running out of some juice on the cameras here, so we gotta probably cut it. Wrap it up here soon. But we haven't really gotten into much of the fatherhood stuff. So
yeah,
you've been a dad for about a year and a half, right?
Yes.
How has that changed your life?
Yeah. So I was thinking about this the other day. Fatherhood is like it's made life seem less serious day to day, like just the things that we spend time doing are just like so like big to him, right? I don't know, just time slows down. It just makes everything we worry about like not so serious, right? Because we love him so much and like every little silly thing we spend time doing, like my sword fighting the other day, like it's so meaningful and it just puts everything else in perspective. So like on the one hand, it makes life not seem so serious, but on the other hand, it makes life ultimately serious because you are now responsible for, like you have to take care of this
person. So vulnerable.
You can't, there's so much stress, there's so much worry, So it's just weird juxtaposition. I don't know if that's the right word, but it's weird balance between like, yeah, life's not so serious, relax, and like, no, go.
Chicken, go.
Take care of yourself.
South.
No. Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, but it's just great, man. I don't know. I think there's just a lot people don't tell you that's good. Like, there's just so many little things that I just never expected to be so joyous. Every few weeks, you know, at his age, it's just he's saying something new, he's doing something new, and like it's all fucking awesome. It's all awesome. You guys know it, right? And you don't expect that going in, like how cool every little thing is going to be. Every little milestone is like, it's amazing. So I don't know. I think that before I had a kid and when I was coming up in my 20s, and I was irresponsible, so it's fine. I don't blame people, but people just talk so negatively about like parenting. And I don't know. I'm really proud of the men of our generation. Okay. A lot of them. I feel like we're doing it all, stepping up as parents. Like the amount of time, like the amount of shit I do with my kid, and like, I don't know, it's just different, man. And it's not their fault, right? They were just doing what they could do back then. Life was different back when we were kids, but sure. But no, I'm just really proud of like men in this generation and like how they're taking care of their kids, and you know, while still trying to kick ass in their career and their marriage and be fucking fit. And it's hard. And so, and I feel that pressure to be well-rounded, but it's also like, kind of like the meaning of life. Like what else is there? It's just right. Like be well-rounded as fuck and like try to do it all. So it's been great. I said this the other day, but I laugh a lot more, like a lot more than I did before I had a kid.
Really?
Yeah. All the time. He's funny.
Yeah.
He's fucking funny.
Just do funny shit.
Yeah.
They don't mean to. They just are.
Yeah. We just laugh. Like last night, you know, could have been just a totally normal day. But with kids, it's like, I forget who said this quote, but there are no ordinary moments. And like last night after dinner, my kid just kept going in the pantry and like shutting the door and hiding in there and then popping out, like scaring us. And then he did it again. And then I turned off all the lights. So he opened it. It was like, and then we hid and he came and found us. And so that became a game. And we did that for like 20, 30 minutes. Yeah. Yeah, he would go into the closet, lock himself in the pantry because he can open and shut the doors now, which is new.
Yeah.
Not super fun. And then
child lock.
Yeah. And then he would like make us go hide. Like, go, right? Move, go hide. And then he'd just come and find us. We just did it over and over and over. And my wife, like, even today, she was like, that was so much fun. You know? But like to non-parents.
Yeah.
That sounds
stupid.
That's stupid.
No, we do the same thing. Yeah. We just started playing hide and seek recently. Yeah. And just goes to like he's got two spots, you know. Yeah. It's like he's always in one of the two, so you gotta like walk around and pretend, you know, like, oh, where's he at, you
enjoy know? That time because it doesn't last long. Mine are 5 and 6,
yeah,
so not much older than where you guys are at. But like the other night, picked the boys up and we're going, like, what do you guys want to do? You guys want to hang out? Let's go do something. Nah, dad, I just want to be alone.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck. I only get so much time with you, now you just like you don't want to hang out with me. Nah, dad. I'm good. But you know, the little time that you get aspect as they grow, it's awesome. And you're getting to that, like every year, it's more and more fun.
Yeah.
So are you going to push him towards getting into jiu-jitsu or any of that sort of stuff? Or,
so we are walking distance to Revive.
Okay.
And they're like expanding their kids' schedule. They even have stuff midday now for like homeschool kids and like, man. So I would love, that's the plan. Mm-hmm. Like if Junior will let me get him in there a little earlier, we'll see. Like,
yeah,
we'll see. Like I took my nephews one time when they were too young, they fucking cried the whole time and left. So he's got to be able to get in there and not cry the whole time. Yeah. So yeah, we're going to test the waters out. He's going to be around it, sure. Right? He's going to be at Watson's. He's going to be at Revive. His mom is a blue belt, like part of his life.
Right.
So I hope he does, yeah, but I'd like to get him into wrestling. Honestly.
Yeah, that's kind of where I think I'm going to start my boys.
Yep. I want my kid to do one of those two things.
Well, just, and I just want my for kid me, to like the correct proximity to where I live. There's not like a Revive's not exactly Revive's a good 35 minutes.
From yeah.
My, you know, and if Kyle had a program, I would put him there, but I'm like,
yeah,
I just don't really wouldn't want to put him anywhere other than Revive or Watson.
Yeah,
really,
exactly.
And so, I mean, I will drive out to Revive if that's still the case in years when he's ready. But, yeah. You know, I was like, there's couple wrestling programs that are a lot closer, and I was like, I think that'd be a good place to
start. Yeah. And here's the thing. Kyle does well enough without it.
Yeah.
And it's very stressful to have a kids program.
Yeah, it would change the dynamic of the gym.
It would, but I would say this. Kyle's a busy guy, but if someone really was passionate about it and said, hey, I really want to do this, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to start it. I'm going to handle it. You don't have to deal with the parents. Like, I think it's not out of the question that there could be some sort of program, at least for older kids. I don't know. Not this is not me speaking for Kyle Walker.
Sure.
I'm just saying he wouldn't want to deal with it. But if somebody was like a go-getter and they're like, hey, I've planned it out. Here's how I do it. I'll handle it. Let me add this to the roster. Like, maybe he'll hear you out. Not me. No. Right? That looks hard as shit. But yeah, being a father, it's awesome. It's the most rewarding and hardest thing I've ever done. It just changes. We're in a hard stage now, but it's hard for a different reason.
Well, I know it's hard to kind of extrapolate this out because he's so little, but is there anything that you're looking forward to?
I'm looking forward. I don't know. Not so much because I know it's all going to happen, but like, that's a tough question, man. I was looking forward to what we're doing right now, which we bought him this little toddler tough playpen in the basement. And like, we wrestle every night for like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, I was looking forward to that
that's something we do every night so long. Before bed. We do 2 2-minute rounds before bed. It's,
yeah.
That's what we do in our, I douse his belly and I'm squeezing the poop out of you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like we do these like silly little wrestling moves and he's just like, loves it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess I look forward to just seeing who he's going to be and like he's going to essentially start like talking and like his little personality. And but yeah. I don't know. I'm just trying to be here and just be in the moment, not let it whiz by. And yeah, I look forward to it all. It's all good. And he's a good kid. All of his little teachers at daycare are always like, pull us aside. Oh, Rowan's hurt.
No.
Got a soft spot for Rowan. He's not always the sweetest to us, but as soon as he leaves that house, he is an angel to everyone he's around and stays with. So like, I guess we're doing something good.
Right. I think they say that means they mess around and goof around with the people that they're most secure with. So
yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Exactly.
Well,
one last question that we always do to end the show, called the Tombstone Game. Here lies Trevor. What's it say on your tombstone?
Man, you know, everyone, death is, I'm not going to say something inspirational at all, but everyone who's ever kind of died in my life, like I reflect on death a lot. People who go too early or people who go, you know, in their old age, like whatever it is, like I really feel like we get one go around and then that's it. I feel like whatever's after is like what was before, right? People will disagree. That's okay. I don't know. That's just how I feel. And it doesn't matter. And my life's great. And I'm the way I have always thought about it when someone passes away is like, you know, like I've had friends like, commit suicide real young or like grandparents die or whatever. And my thought is always just like, hey, right behind you. Like, you know, that might be 10, 20, 50 years, but not that long. Right. I'm seeing that now. Life only gets fucking faster as you get older.
Yeah, especially for kids in the mix.
It was so slow when I was a kid. Now it's so fast. So like, I don't know. Right behind you has always been like my kind of mantra when people, hey, right behind you. Yeah. So I wouldn't put that on my tombstone because people would read it and they go, and they turn around. But it might say something like, hey, don't forget, you'll be right behind me. Like that.
Love it.
That's perfect. Awesome.
All right, guys, thank you so much for tuning into the show. You know, if you haven't subscribed yet, please click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Make sure you click that like button, comment what you thought below, and we will see you next time.